we present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello, welcome again to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from the Sunday Telegraph, read by Charlotte Green.
Researchers who are studying memory loss in old age at Warwick University had a setback when an elderly woman volunteer forgot to turn up for an experiment.
Thanks to the many people who sent that in. Let's meet the teams now. Will you welcome first on my right, Francis Ween and Jeremy Hardy. And facing them on my left, Alan Corran and Clive Anderson. And before we start round one, here's a listing spotted in the Radio Times.
10 o'clock, airport. Documentary series following people who work at London's Heathrow Airport. Tonight, President Clinton makes a fleeting appearance, surrounded by a huge retinue. And Customs Officer Garth Powell thinks he's caught a drug smuggler.
And he may be right. Thanks to Norman Coward of Bicester for that. Francis, who has offered a helping hand after handing on?
Oh, this is everyone's worst nightmare, isn't it? It is. When you move into a house and you then find that the previous inhabitants start popping round every other evening, saying, oh, we just come to see how you're settling in, make sure everything's all right. And you know perfectly well what they're actually doing, snooping about, seeing what you've done to their wonderful interior decoration, you know, whether you've ripped out the leatherette studded drinks cabinet they built in the drawing room, or the doorbell that plays collected works of Andrew Lloyd Webber, that sort of thing. And this is what John Major is planning to do if he loses the election in the unlikely event that he is evicted from number 10. He's very generously offered to come round with a cup of sugar now and again and a few hints on how to negotiate the single currency. Is this right?
It is indeed, yes. In interest of continuity, Mr. Major would be happy, he said, to offer an incoming Labour cabinet the benefit of his vast experience in office. Mr. Major also wants to warn Mr. Blair about the Downing Street ghost, the unearthly spectre of a mad-eyed, white-faced old crone. Yes, she still has the keys. 2 points to Francis. Jeremy, whose call for a liberal rethink may appeal to the grassroots?
Sir David Steele, in short. Sir David Steele has raised the issue of drugs and said that politicians shouldn't try and decide these matters because they're old and it's a generational thing. And so you need to appoint people who've really got their finger on the pulse of youth culture. And he suggests a royal commission. And they'll go up to teenage crackheads in Moss Side and say, oh, yeah, you don't want to mess around with that gutter, what? Why don't you bowl this hoop down the street with a stick? I was very active in the Sea Cadets at your age. I still am in a funny sort of a way.
Well, look, Claire Short did it for Labour, didn't she, as well? She was cross-examined about her drugs policy.
Mm.
They asked her, she was on the internet for some reason, canvassing on the superhighway, and they said, have you ever smoked cannabis? And she said, I'm not going to answer that, because if I answer it, then you'll ask everyone else in the Shadow Cabinet, and some of them will have to lie. Because they haven't all smoked cannabis, but they'll have to pretend they have.
Sir David Steele has called for a royal commission on legalising drugs. He claimed that successive governments had failed to address the issue and that politicians were not qualified to pontificate on the subject. Mr Ashdown himself has never taken drugs, but he did say that his 5 weeks on the campaign trail had been a pretty bad trip, man. Clive, who mentioned the war and was brought to book?
This is the, is it a war book? A war document. It's a strange story, because it turns out, because in the actual war, as I understand it, we won, if I may say we won, because we cracked all the Germans' codes, so we knew what they were doing. And if it had been the other way around, the Germans would have won. In this particular election, apparently the Conservatives have known all along what the Labour Party was going to do for the last year, which explains why the Conservative Party is doing so well in this election and is obviously storming on to victory at Dunkirk, as I think it would be. But anyway, they had it. It was sent to them in a plain brown envelope or stolen or something like that, and it reveals stuff like, you know, Labour Party going to stress how good Tony Blair is and they're worried about how good John Major is and other sort of secrets like that, and how their policy will have to, you know, be the same as a Conservative's policy and they'll get in. And they haven't got to worry about the Liberals, all that sort of secret stuff like that, and no one could have guessed. Watch out for the Scottish Nationalists in Scotland, not so much a worry in Godalming, that sort of thing. So the Tories know this, and the Labour Party know it, and now we all know it.
This was Labour's war book, published and promoted by their literary agent, Brian Mawhinney. It includes the claim that Mr Major is weak and devious, but Mawhinney says the complete opposite is true. He's not weak and devious, he's devious and weak. Alan, listen to this.
Now, baby, listen, baby, don't you treat me this away, cause I'll be back on my feet someday.
Don't care if you do, cause it's understood, you ain't got no money, you just ain't no good.
Well, I guess if you say so, I'll have to pack my things and go.
That's right, hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more.
Well, you know this, don't you? Which Union Jacques attacked the Union Jack?
It's amazing. I dreaded these 5 weeks of the election because there are four questions and three main parties. And in the interests of the Representation of the People Act, I always get the fourth question. And it's always something like the free tea towel tendency or the Whigs or the small vermin persuasion. This one isn't about an English party at all. It's about, well, it is really. It's about the Get Out of Europe party. It's really Jacques Chirac's activities on behalf of Jimmy Goldsmith. Jacques Chirac.
Is it Jacques Chirac?
No, Jacques Santer.
That's it.
I always forget that.
They're not all.
Well,
there's more than one Jacques.
I'm sorry. I never believed in Santa.
suck it into that
yes,
one.
I did. Yes. Yeah, Jacques Santer got extremely angry about Britain's lack of enthusiasm for Europe at a time when everything with four wheels in Britain was queuing outside Dover and the French fishermen campaigning against European legislation to make their holes smaller. I mean, their net holes smaller. I don't think Brussels goes quite as far as to... No, it just does, doesn't. I rather like the Helmut... Are we going to have the Helmut Kohl question?
No, what's that?
He's suing Penthouse. It's wonderful.
Not nude he's doing, spread.
No, a nude Mrs. Helmut Kohl lying across... They did a mock-up of Mrs. Helmut Kohl lying across the bonnet of a Mercedes, and he's suing them. I just wondered where he was reading Penthouse. It was his vision. The world's, or Europe's largest buttocks draped either side of a lavatory. And he suddenly says, that's my missus.
And the scores at the end of round one are Francis and Jeremy 4, Alan and Clive with 4. We start round two with an item spotted in the Watford Observer.
Our community policeman is back pounding the streets after taking a break from the beat. The 42-year-old joined the ranks at Oxy Station last week and has already set about people in the area.
Thank you, John Reynolds of Watford, for that. Francis, what was the net result of a wavy protest?
I think this is Johnny Foreigner again. The French trawlers have been blocking Calais and Boulogne and places like that, stopping our plucky British ferries getting in. They're not very happy, apparently, the French fishermen. And they were taken to court, and the judge said, well, you're not put on this earth to be happy. Fish, I should think, were deliriously happy. They thought they'd had a bit of a break. Because they want the privilege of using these nets, which are built on the design of a tea strainer-type net, so nothing can get through. You know, you pick up every last scrap of plankton and then turn it into crispy fish-style nuggets for the gourmet plankton market.
They are marvellous, the French. They do know how to protest, don't they? I mean, we're just useless at that sort of thing. I mean, say, should we have a blockade? Oh, what's the use? And when the French are pissed off, they start hurling burning squirrels into the bores. Filling the channel with rotting creme brulee. Marvellous.
Jeremy, which three wise men have their sights set on a new age?
Is this the Carey endorsing the... these funny sites of special religious interest. The Archbishop of Canterbury has been sponsoring these religious things around the country, which are like stone circles, and he's been accused by traditionalists in the CV of idolatry, because if you're an Anglican, you're not supposed to worship objects, you're supposed to raffle them. Because if the C of E had got hold of the Turin Shroud, we'd have just washed it and put it in the church jumble. Yeah.
That's it, isn't it?
Yes.
Roughly. Yeah. What about the three wise men? I didn't understand that bit, though.
Was it the Duke of Edinburgh as well?
Was it?
Some other prat. I can't remember. I don't know what constitutes a sight, though. I mean, if you have a goblin or elf anywhere a pixie has trod, I couldn't quite understand where all these sights are. Is it only stone circles?
No, it's gay clubs and all sorts of things.
The Archbishop of Canterbury, the Duke of Edinburgh, and the Prince of Wales have launched a plan to conserve 2,000 sacred sites for the New Age and green movements. Charles is a serious environmentalist, caring so much for the English countryside, he persuaded his mother to give him roughly 40% of it on his birthday. One landowner, however, expressed concern that his sacred site might be overrun by mad hippies, so the Duke asked Charles and the Archbishop to stay in the Range Rover. Live your musical clue. Which ex-First Lady has taken to dishing the dirt?
Dear, I wish I'd read the papers this week. It's rather boring, it's all about the election. The only ex-First Lady one immediately springs to mind is Margaret Thatcher, Lady Thatcher. I'm looking at your glassy expression. Or it's someone in America, it could be a First Lady in America.
She's a former First Lady, yes. I think we're looking further south than Europe. And
oh, it's Winnie Mandela.
Yes.
Oh, right, it was Winnie Mandela, apparently. Yeah.
Winnie Mandela is sort of selling the family jewels. I mean, she's selling everything. She's she's memoiring all her tales of herself and...
But she is also selling the contents of her garden. She's digging up bits of earth from her garden and...
She's selling everything.
Former South African First Lady Winnie Mandela, who following her acrimonious divorce from the president has started selling tiny bottles of commemorative soil from the garden of their old home. No one thought this is what she meant when she vowed to finally make some money out of the old sod. So I'll give 2 points to Clive there and 1 point to Francis for actually getting the answer.
I feel like somebody who didn't do his physics homework and has claimed to have left it on the bus. I'm sorry.
I'll have a question, though.
Yes, ask Alan anything.
No, I don't.
He's so clever, Alan, he'll get this.
Alan, who accused Britain's third channel of becoming third rate?
I don't know.
I think it's the ITC. I think there are complaints. There are complaints to the ITC that ITV have too many soaps and they go on for too long. And they're absolutely right. I've been watching this thing for 5 weeks. It's got no bloody plot. There's a madman that keeps on smiling. There's an old grey clapped-out one and one with slitty eyes. And they're on every bloody morning, noon and night saying nothing. Nothing gets advanced. Nothing changes from day to day. Oh, it's BBC as well. But there's a complaint to the ITC about the junk, the pap that's being fed into young people like Jeremy.
Too many soap operas. Not enough chat shows, I think they are. Very fair point.
It's great when you hear the words next on Carlton drama. You just know it's not going to be Macbeth, don't you?
People actually using Carlton pejoratively of other things. So you say, what was Sense and Sensibility like? Well, it was a bit Carlton, really. It has become a generic for crap television.
This is the report by the Independent Television Commission, which claims that ITV relies too much on soap operas and game shows, denying viewers diversity. ITV bosses hit back, saying they do give people a genuine choice. Take the money or open the box. The report accuses many primetime shows of unashamedly chasing ratings. Though it is well known that Barry Morgan never resist a man in uniform. ITV chiefs replied by saying they can't be expected to make programmes nobody wants to watch. That's Channel 5's job. And at the end of round two, the scores are Alan and Clive 8, but Francis and Jeremy edging into the lead with 9 points. We start round three with a cutting from the Gloucester Echo.
27-year-old Mark Boone loves loud music, but one neighbour said the constant noise had driven locals to despair. People are at the end of their tether. It just wakes you up, especially when you can't get to sleep.
Thanks to L. Perry of Tewkesbury for that. Francis, why is the health of the country an urban myth?
Oh, it's a survey. that old favourite. We have about a dozen a week, showing that stags don't enjoy being hunted and that this and that. But this is one that is genuinely sort of surprising in that it shows that children brought up in towns are healthier than children brought up in the country. Children in towns get lots of exercise, smash and grab raids, that sort of thing, round. So they're frightfully fit, whereas people in the country just sit around in a bucolic stupor, getting fat and idle.
Also, people in the countryside have health problems because their parents are cousins, as a rule.
It is the perhaps surprising news that children who live in the city are healthier than their country cousins. Gone are the days when the farmer's son used to walk miles taking Dad's prize Hereford to be serviced by the bull. These days, father is more likely to do that himself. Jeremy, listen to this.
Thursday at 4, he came a-knocking at my door, singing, "Hey, baby, I'm your telephone, and you just show me where you want it, and I'll put it where I can. I can put it in the bedroom, I can put it in the hall, I can put it in the bathroom, I can hang it on the wall. You can have it with the bush, you can have it with the ring, and if you really want it, you can have it."
Who's ringing the changes by winding up the wind-ups?
The watchdog. So Ofsted or somebody has condemned the fake hoax prankster tape messages. For a joke, you get told to phone. You phone up this number and you get this recorded message saying, "Welcome to St. Thomas's Hospital. If you have a touch tone phone and know the extension you require, press 1. If you want to become a private patient, tap in your credit card details." And things like, I spent all of January and February on phone to a Peugeot dealer in Stockwell because I was having a bit of trouble with my car. And I was just on the phone constantly on hold, having to listen to Search for the Hero Inside Yourself. I got a phone call from BT saying, "Do you want to be on the Friends and Family Scheme?" And I said, "All right." And the letter came through, and it turns out that this Peugeot garage in Stockwell are among my nearest and dearest friends. It's depressing, isn't it?
This is the news that practical joke premium rate telephone lines are soon to be outlawed. The craze for the hoax answering service has started to get out of hand. One customer who phoned the speaking clock was told, "Sod off and get a watch." This is just the latest in a long line of insulting numbers put out by BT. The last few have been their chairman's salary. Clive, who is not only leaving Tinseltown, but also going on stage?
This is Dudley Moore, who's had a long and distinguished career in Hollywood, starting with Arthur and
ending with
petering out somewhat. He's now going to become Buttons. A very youthful Buttons, I dare say, in a pantomime, not as a rubbish pantomime, somewhere in Southampton, I think, and people have mocked him roundly, and possibly rightly, for this rather abrupt change around his career, but I suppose he'll make a rather good Buttons. But I suppose it's not quite as glamorous as it's Southampton, Beverly Hills. Good luck to him, I say. I can't be too rude, because he'll presumably be over in England leading up to Christmas, and no doubt he'll be wanting to be appearing on the odd talk show on television. Anyway, he's good old Cuddly Dudley is back in as Buttons.
It's a bit depressing that it's in Southampton, isn't it? If it was Scarborough or somewhere.
Everything is depressing in
Southampton.
I know,
I spent 3 years. I tried to get into the University of Life and they wouldn't have me, so I had to go to Southampton. Which is the only university that's applied to become a polytechnic.
They've already started training local audience participation. Dudley calls out, "Where's my movie career?" And they reply, "Behind you." Alan, who dug up some old Anglo iron?
Did you hear that little mutter? "This is good." It's amazing the sort of things that excite Clive Anderson, right? Children wouldn't really understand. This is... They found a helmet with a boar on it. And they found a little bit of rusty sword. And they've induced from all this that it belonged... Well, there's a reference to it in Beowulf, apparently. But it's bits that belong to an old English prince that they've dug up in, I think, Northampton. Was it Northampton?
Yes. The police are baffled.
He was a warrior prince, I think. Well, yes. Warrior formerly known as prince, anyway. It was described as armour, this find. It's 1,400-year-old armour. And it said there was a sword and a helmet and a bronze bowl. And
it wasn't much good. They had to pick it up with a spoon.
A bowl, because it was in the middle of a battle. I mean, This was a bit of ancient armour. I suppose they just sort of went out showing off their kitchen equipment, saying, "You haven't got anything to match this, have you?" And then the Picts or the Scots or whoever they were would have to produce their Tupperware and compete.
And the scores at the end of round three are Alan and Clive 12, but Francis and Jeremy still just ahead with 13 points. Before we start the final round, here's a cutting sent in by Simon Williams.
A riotous evening's entertainment was enjoyed at the mill at Sonning, with the world premiere of the play Kiss My Aunt. The play... The play had enormous audience appeal, but the second act could benefit from some judicious cutting. It runs until May the 17th.
Francis, listen to this.
Would you like to ride in my beautiful balloon? Would you like to ride in my beautiful balloon? We could go over the sky together, you and I. Oh, we can fly, we can fly.
Who was the natural selection for an award?
It's an American who was bored one day and so acquired about 45, I think, weather balloons, tied them to his chair, and then let the anchor go, and he whooshed up to about 11,000 feet, just like that. And he was hovering there, 11,000 feet, a bit of a hazard to air traffic and various things, and had to be eventually rescued, I think, by a helicopter, had to fly up and hoik him out of his chair and take him back down. And he didn't die, but he has won an award for the most stupid attempted suicide in America, which I think is a bit unfair on Richard Branson, because he made a pretty good stab at it as well.
He had an air rifle. He panicked. He had an air rifle to shoot the balloons, but airplanes phoned to the airport and said, "There's a man with a gun on a chair at 11,000 feet."
Californian Larry Walters won this year's Darwin Award for outstanding contributions to natural selection through self-sacrifice after he spent 14 hours floating over Los Angeles strapped to a garden chair. Los Angeles police attempted to slap a charge on him for dangerously flying a deck chair, but they couldn't make it stand up. Jeremy, how are children being encouraged to eat all their mange tout?
Chocolate veg, isn't it? Some Burke has decided that children aren't getting enough additives in their food. And there are these children eating vegetables that haven't got any additives in, so that they've got to have flavouring. And so they're making them taste of chocolate and pizza and stuff. And it seems strange to me, because when I was a youth, the whole point of vegetables was that they were boiled until they tasted of absolutely nothing, until their cell structure collapsed and they couldn't fight back. So the idea that vegetables are supposed to taste of something is this continental import. But you could play a good prank on a child, couldn't you? You could say, if you eat your carrots, you can have some chocolate. And when they eat it up, you say, "Ah, you've already had your chocolate, little fool."
Alan, which little pest knows nothing about art but knows what it likes to eat?
Oh, there were a lot of little pests this week. I was rather hoping we were going to get the Sheffield coot one.
So tell us that one.
A terrapin is biting the legs off coots in the park in Sheffield, but it only bites one at a time. It doesn't bite both legs off. It's either a gourmet or it's got a really disturbed sense of humour. Because these coots are trying to stand on one leg and it wind blows like murder in Sheffield, and it's very sad. I think this is the one about these extremely discriminating beetles that are eating a Caravaggio in the National Gallery, the taking of Christ. And I couldn't make out from the piece in the paper whether it was one beetle gradually eating its way through or lots of beetles that were coming out at night. But they won't eat anything else, they're just eating this, which is very strange.
It took weeks for anyone to notice this. There was just somebody happened to be wandering past and saw a little black speck on the picture and went to one of the guards and said, "I think there's a beetle on that picture eating it." And he said, "No, I don't think so." And it had been going on for weeks, and they realised that everyone else who saw it presumably thought it was a Damien Hirst installation.
I was just thinking coots have got a new stereotype now, because you get bald as a coot and queer as a coot, and now you could have limping like a coot.
Legless as a coot.
Yeah.
Why are they queer, though?
What's queer about the coot, apart from having one leg, which is...
Well, they used to call themselves gay, but the more politically aware of them now call themselves queer.
Right.
The sort of outraged end of park foul. They go around outing mallards who pretend to be married.
Before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
Simon, this is from Dawn to Dusk, the round-the-clock guide for visitors to Leicester and the region. Places to visit around Leicestershire: Abbey Pumping Station, Corporation Road. This historic building and site houses a public health exhibition. Displays include the unique Victorian beam engines and an interactive toilet.
Jeremy.
This is an advert from the Evening Echo in Bournemouth. Under general vacancies, a professional home-based puff reader is required by the publisher. Specimens and CV, please.
Specimens?
Yeah,
that's
specimens.
What you get at an interactive toilet, I suppose. Clive.
This comes from the Yorkshire Post and from Mike Robinson. When PC Kevin McGowan was told to go and investigate a distress call sounding on an emergency bleep of a woman who had received threats from her ex-husband, he did everything right. He rushed to the house, banged on the front door, and when he got no reply, went round the back. There he found the back door unlocked and two cats waiting patiently on the step. He let them in, checked the house, and found to be in good order. He handed the keys over to a neighbour. On the following day, the police received a call from the woman who thanked them for their concern. There was only one thing wrong. The officer had let next door's cats in, and they'd eaten her parrot.
Alan.
I've got one from the Boscombe Post, Simon. It's fishmonger, Mr. Reginald Drayton, who became well known in Winton for composing shop window pictures made entirely of fish, has died at the age of 64. His most notable fish creation was a portrait of Sir Winston Churchill, complete with a cigar made from a kipper.
Well, let's look at the final scores. Alan and Clive, 16. Francis and Jeremy, just winners with 17 points. And before we say goodbye, here's a story from the Times sent in by Martin Trump of Newbury.
Councillors are to consider changing the name of the coastal area of West Sussex to end the sniggers. Villages in Manhood, a triangular stretch of land jutting into the sea, have had enough of jibes about its size and shape. Jim Stokes, a councillor, said, "It's a serious point."
Thank you all, and with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Francis Wheen, Clive Anderson and Jeremy Hardy. The chairman was Simon Hoggart, and the news is read by me, Charlotte Green. The chairman's script was written by Ian Pattinson, with Hugh Rycroft and David Spicer. The producer was Aled Evans.